Okay, everybody. Good to see you. Sorry, I just got to start on time because I got a mishmar down at the seminary about half an hour, so we got to get this going. But that being said, the Parsha Shmos, obviously, you guys are familiar that the whole Egypt story begins. But just to recap, as we always do, right, Bnei Yisrael go down to Mitzrayim. They're enslaved, right? Obviously, almost immediately, and almost without interlude, we shift to Paro telling the midwives to kill the baby boys. They refuse, right? And then Moshe is born. The whole saga with him in the river, Bas Paro, Miriam, Yocheved, etc. Moshe grows up in Paro's house. He kills a Mitzri, right? Runs away to Midian, marries Tzipora, right? Already Chazal, the Medrash point out that we skip like 60 years of Moshe's life. That the Torah does not record, which is a story for another time. If you look at Midrashim, right, he ran away to Cush, and he had this whole fight with Bilam. Again, you can check the Midrashim; it's a very super cool story over there. Obviously, the burning bush. The majority, actually, of the Parsha, underratedly, the majority of the Parsha is a long conversation between Moshe and the Kosh Baruch Hu at the burning bush. Moshe goes back to Mitzrayim, Aaron meets him, they go to Paro, right? Obviously, Paro is not interested in what Moshe has to say. He increases the worst workload for Am Yisrael. Everybody gets upset, Moshe complains, right? And the Parsha ends with Hashem saying, just you wait, everything's going to go down like I want it to go down, don't worry, I'll take care of everything. And obviously, with much suspense leading into next week. So obviously, tons to talk about. We're just going to, make a couple of quick points over here that pertain to us and Musar and growth and spirituality. So the Or HaChaim points out right away, if you notice the beginning of the first few psukim, right, the Torah highlights, right, that the Mitzrim did not enslave the Jews, right, until Vayamos Yosef V'chol Achav V'chol Ador Ahu. The pasuk says, right, again, it tells us again, right, that that Yosef and his brothers died. Right, we learned that at the end, we had that at the end of Sefer Bereishis. But the Mitzrim didn't enslave the Jews until the brothers and Yosef died. And the Or HaChaim says that was a result of two things. First of all, when Yosef died and the brothers died, right, the Jews almost lowered themselves in their own eyes when the brothers died. Right, again, when a prince dies, when a king dies, right, the king, the nation feels a sense of loss. Right, Lahavdil Elef Alfei Avdalos. Right, when the Queen of England passed away, it's right, all of England was torn into mourning. Right, it's the nation doesn't feel so good about themselves. So the Jews, it says the Or HaChaim, I'm not sure where he gets this from, probably based on the Psukim, but he said that the Jews felt less. They felt less in their eyes. That they felt of themselves. Meaning, because their princes were gone, that generation was dying out, and they felt like they hadn't attained the same greatness. And two, right, that the Mitzrim, and therefore the Mitzrim really reacted, right, to the Jewish view of themselves. Right, once they were lower in their own eyes, the Mitzrim were able to subjugate them. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz points out twofold, that two things are happening over here in this Or HaChaim. That first of all, the Rishayim, the Mitzrim were obviously tremendous Rishayim, but notice the kavod they would give the brothers. That first of all, they wouldn't dare subjugate the Jews when Yosef and the brothers in that generation were still alive, right? They still had a tremendous amount of karas hatov, right, for the fact that Yosef had saved them during the times of famine, right? And they couldn't bring themselves to subjugate the Jews, right, until that generation had died. That's A. And B, when the Jews were chashuv in their own eyes, when they had those people with them, when they were having thought well about themselves, right, the Mitzrim couldn't touch them. But once the generation died out, so then the Mitzrim were able to kind of poke holes and start lowering them, right? Again, we see, if you ever go to a Holocaust museum, right, you see the images of how the Nazis, right, dropped the Jews to become subhuman, right? The pictures of them, propaganda, and them with, long noses and rat tails and all these types of things, right, to make them almost seem animalistic, seem less than human. So that says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and says Or HaChaim that the Jews kind of started that a little bit, right? They thought of themselves a little bit less, and therefore that kind of led things to the Mitzrim thinking about them less and then subjugating them and as things went on. Now, two unbelievable musters that Rav Chaim brings out. First of all, think about that. As bad as the Mitzrim were, right? And they enslaved the Jews for 200 years, deserved all the punishments. Kadosh Baruch Hu sent tons of supernatural makos and killed them all in Yom Tov. Right? As bad as they were still mechabed the brothers and the generation. Right, just we have so much trouble, again speaking about myself, yeah, giving our rebbeim, our teachers, our parents, our gedolim, proper kavod. Right, we have such trouble. Now this generation, myself, well, the previous generation, we have so much trouble with kavod. Right, and yet these rishayim wouldn't dare touch the Jews, right, until the people who they revered, right, passed away. And again, so it brings to mind how Esav. Pasuk says that Esav wanted to kill Yaakov, but he couldn't bear to do it while his father was still alive. Right? The Pasuk says, right, Esav said to himself, he will wait till Yaakov dies, right, and then he'll wait till Yitzchak dies, and then I'll kill Yaakov. Right? Again, there was a basic sense of kavod that I think many of us, myself certainly included, do not have. And it's something that really needs to be thought about because, you know, if we don't honor the previous generation and the Gedolim and our teachers and the people who have done amazing things for us, so who are we really, you know, who are we going to honor? There's no one else. There's no one else. The people that took care of us and you know, and raised us and are responsible for our spiritual growth and physical well-being, right? Those are the people that require our kavod and deserve our kavod. And if we can't bring ourselves to kavod mechabidam, so then, you know, we're going to live very selfish lives. Indeed. But I think a little bit more relevant for us, and certainly nowadays for kids in this generation, and really when I was growing up also, right, is, says Rav Chaim, when a person realizes their own greatness, and this is what most of his drasha is about over there in Sichos Moser, when a person realizes their own greatness, that can protect them from sin. When a person realizes that they are an amazing human being, they are great, that they have a chelek elokam imal, a neshama, right, a piece of God, right, they realize that they can affect worlds with their behavior, right? They have a sense of ability and responsibility, and they feel a responsibility to act appropriately. Right, this is the Nefesh HaChaim in a nutshell, right? The beginning of Nefesh HaChaim, right? That basically, it's Kabbalah 101. Why is he saying this to the masses? Why is he teaching this in the form of a Musar Sefer? Because it says that when a person reads what a person can do with his actions, right, their upper worlds and lower worlds and all this type of spiritual stuff, you realize that you are a superhero. With the ability to change worlds with your actions. And the purpose of Nefesh HaChaim is to hopefully drive someone to build worlds, right, instead of destroying them. But that's the idea. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, right, just switching between Rav Chaim's here, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz brings lots of examples. Right? One of them is the Medrash explains that Yosef, when he was pressured by Eshes Potiphar, right, the pasuk says, Eich eses ha-davar hara, zevich hatashi lelukim. How can I do this terrible thing? I will sin with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there are a lot of Mamari Chazal in that statement. It says, Chaim Shmulevitz, since Yosef realized he was the most beloved of his father's sons, and again, the Medrash says a couple of things that Yosef thought, but one of them was, I'm the most beloved of Yaakov, my father's sons. If I'm going to do this sin, what is that going to mean? What is that going to do? I'm the greatest. He felt, he held, and he was right, that he was destined to be the Melech. So if he does this sin, what is that going to do? I'm going to be tamei. He really saw that, the Medrash said that Yosef saw that Reuven blew his chance at the Bechora and the Kahuna, the kingship, because of this issue, right? Because he, whatever you mean, whatever, however you understand the pasuk, when it says Vayelech Reuven Vayishkav Bilha Ishes Aviv, that Reuven went and was with Yaakov's wife Bilha. So what is that? Whatever that means, okay? Pasha says he moved to their bed, but. Tachas Reuven blew it. He lost it because of that, right? Pachas Kamayim, right? He's impetuous. He couldn't be the king. So Yosef saw that and said, "How could I do the same thing? Right? I'm the most beloved." He understood his greatness, and because of that, right, he couldn't bring himself to sin. Now, again, naturally, there are other midrashim that discuss how Yosef avoided that sin, right? He saw his father's face, right? But that works hand in hand with this midrash, meaning he saw his father's face and he realized how important he was in his father's eyes and his father's house, etc. Turning to our parsha, right, you have another representation of this idea. You have another, idea that you see later by the burning bush, by the snare, when Moshe went, obviously in the burning bush, the pasuk says, "Vayar Malach Hashem Elav Belav Aseish," or probably Vayira, right? Hashem, Malach of Hashem appeared to him in a fire, mitoch hasneh, right? Vayar v'inei hasneh bo'er bo'ish v'hasneh anenu uchal, right? Moshe sees, right, the sneh is burning, right, and it is not being consumed. Moshe says to himself, "Wow, this is crazy. Let me go see what's going on over here. Why is, right, the bush not being consumed?" And then finally, right, he goes, and finally, you know, Akash Baruch Hu says to him, "Altikrav halom, don't come any closer. Shal na lecha me'al raglecha. Take off your shoes. Ki ha-makom asher atah omed alav ad mas kodeshu. Because the place you're standing, right, is holy ground. And this is a famous question that everybody deals with. What does the burning bush represent? Right, Kosh Baruch Hu could have appeared to Moshe in any form or fashion. So what was the imagery of the burning bush, right, that would be consumed? So in Siva Shalom, right, the Slonim HaRebbe brings a beautiful explanation. He says that the bush represented Am Yisrael, and the fires surrounding it were the impurity, right, and the enslavement of the Egyptian culture. And Moshe saw this vision, and his shaila was, right, he felt the need to look deeper. He said, why is the bush not being burned? Meaning, how is Bnei Yisrael surviving this golus, right? And what zechus is the bush? Is Bnei Yisrael, is the tree, right, it's chayimi, right? What zechus is Bnei Yisrael still alive spiritually? Right, how is it possible that Bnei Yisrael has been avoiding, right, the powerful fires of, you know, Egyptian culture and influence, etc.? And Kosh Baruch Hu answered him, right, for the place at which you stand is holy ground, right? Ad mas kodeshu, the place you're standing, take your shoes off, you're standing on holy ground, meaning the Jewish people have a chelek elokam imal, right? The Jewish people have a piece of a Kosh Baruch Hu rooted inside of them, that's their neshama, right? That's where their strength to survive comes from, right? The holy ground that they stand upon, right? The holy soul is in their body. They have holy ground, right? They're a piece of ground, and they're a piece of shamayim, right? There's also they have a neshama, and their body gives them the ability to withstand the fire of Mitzrayim, because they realize that they have a chelek elokam imal, right? They are a prince and princesses, and that's how they're able to overcome, right? And that's how they survive the Mitzri culture, and that's how we can survive it nowadays as well, because, you know, even though we have, you know, tremendous pressure from everywhere, right, from maybe friends or college or work or whatever it is, certainly society, everything that we see, right, we still have a chelek elokam imal. Right, and we have a piece. Literally, we have a piece of God inside of us. Right, we probably don't talk about that often enough. You literally have a piece of Akash Baruch Hu, right, inside of us, right, that Akash Baruch Hu gave us. So we have that ability to accomplish so much. Right now, we just need the courage to do it. Now, just as beautiful as that explanation is, I thought perhaps, again, another Musar from this kind of idea, from the burning bush, I thought we could answer the Nesivas Shalom's question in slightly differently. Right, I heard once an amazing shmooze from Moshe Weinberger, right, Rav Neish Kodesh. Right, he told the story about a Hasidish Rebbe. Right, he's obviously having a Fabrengen or whatever. And after all the introductory Lachaims, the Rebbe went around the table and he asked the following kasha. Right, he said, all right, everybody, I want you to tell me, what is the holiest place in the world? What's the holiest place in the world? So as you can imagine, the answers were predictable, right? Right, ranging from Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim to the Har Habayis, Kodesh Kodashim, right, Shul, I don't know, someone probably screamed out Uman or something, whatever. Except that the Rebbe said, that's not correct. And he said, for each and every person, the holiest place in the world is the ground that they're standing on right now. Right, and then he quoted our pasuk, right? Shal nalacham el reglecha, right? Ki admas kodeshu. What you're standing on right now, that's the holiest ground in the world. Because people very often fail to live in the present, right? We inevitably, people are either living in the past or living in the future, right? They're either remembering what happened in the past or they're thinking about, right, what's coming. Right? But very few people live their lives as it is happening. And explain the Rebbe, right? That's the most crucial thing. That's the most crucial thing in life. Right? If a person can be wholly involved in the moment, and in the place, in every scenario, in every situation that they're sitting in, right, that's the holiest place for them. Right? And again, that's the quote of that pasuk, right? Hamakom asher atah omed alav ad mas kodeshu. Right? And that has to be our attitude. And that's perhaps what HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered, what he meant when he answered Moshe's question. Moshe said, let me turn and see why, Madula Ivaris now, why is this bush not being burned? How are the Jews surviving? How are they standing in the fires of Mitzrayim, of the Mitzri culture? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, you want to know the answer? It's because they're standing on holy ground. That yes, in Echonami, things have been bad. Last couple hundred years, lousy, terrible. Spiritually, 49th level of Tuma, things are bad. But every moment, right, they have the chance to do better. Right? Yes, they're oppressed, they're beaten down, they're enslaved, but they can do what they can. Right? And they haven't changed their names, they haven't changed their language, their clothes. Right? They're hanging on, right, to every vestige, right, of hope. Right? And every moment is an opportunity to do better. And that's lechora how they have survived until now. And the muster from this is obvious. You know, too often, Right? We fail to utilize an opportunity, right? Just because we're kind of just not living in the moment, right? How often do we fail to pay attention in either a shiur or whatever? We're thinking about a game or a date or something that happened or something that will happen. Right? Again, we don't give our kids a proper attention because we're thinking about this. We got to do that and this job and that job. We got to buy this and got to get that. And again, obviously, now it takes a tremendous amount of skill. Right, again, it's not something that comes naturally. It's something you have to train yourself to do. But if a person is able to truly live in the moment, right, to train themselves and live in the moment, so then you can really, truly accomplish great things. Because before you turn around, right, you've had many, many great moments in a row, right, and then you've already accomplished great things. Switching gears a little bit. Pasuk says, again, talking Perek Beis, beginning of Perek Beis, when introducing Moshe Rabbeinu, so the Torah says very cryptically, it says, starting the Moshe story, it says, Vayedach ish mebeis Levi, vayikachas bas Levi. Right, random, right? Some Levi guy went and took a Levi girl, whatever that means. So Rashi famously explains the whole backstory. It's a Gemara in Sota, in Daf Yud Beis. Right, that the Torah is hinting to what was going on behind the scenes between Amram and Yocheved and Miriam. Right, Amram and Yocheved and Miriam. What happened? Paro decrees to kill all the boys. Right, again, throw all the boys in the river. And Amram, who's one of the Gadol Ador, says, "All right, everybody. Right, Amram. He divorces his wife. He's like, forget it. What's the point? What's the point of having kids?" Right, so he divorces his wife, and obviously, being one of the leaders, everybody or many Jews follow his example. And Miriam, right, who was very, right, one of the unsung heroes, perhaps, or maybe it is sung properly, I don't know, but one of the unsung heroes of the Parsha, goes to her father and says, what's going on over here? Your decree is worse than Paro's. Right? Paro decreed on the males, on the boys, and you decreed death on boys and girls, because there's not going to be any kids born now. Right? Paro decreed an Olam Hazeh in this world, and you're decreeing an Olam Haba, because now, again, you're not going to have any kids born. Right, nothing. So, what are you doing over here? So Amram realized that his daughter was right. Right, so he went and vayelech. He went and vayikach, and he took his bas Levi, his wife. Right, he took his wife again. Now there are many, obviously, there are a lot of Torah talk, revolving around this pasuk, and obviously the commentary is all over. Right, discuss it at length, but just one of the words, just to highlight one thing in that pasuk. Right, what's the purpose of the vayelech? What is Vayilech? Where did Amram go exactly? Right, he could have just said Vayikach Amram as Yocheved, or Vayikach Ish as Mi Beis Levi as Bas Levi, right? What do you mean Vayilech? What do you mean he went and he took her? So, simple pshat, Ibn Ezra takes the, not to say Lashon Hara about Ibn Ezra, but he takes the easy way out, and he says, he traveled from one city to the next. The Ramban says, why in the world would the Torah tell us that? So the Ramban explains a bit deeper that whenever the Torah uses the word vayelech, or the word lech, halach, right, traveled, he went, it's trying to connote something that's difficult, something that's hard to do, something that's going, someone who's going above and beyond, and putting an extra effort to accomplish something. And it was probably difficult for Amram to remarry Yocheved, right? Again, there's, the solid possibility that some of their children would be, thrown into the river, and sure enough, Moshe is born, and, before he gets thrown, they put him in voluntarily. But he was able to do it, to overcome whatever, pressure and admitting he was wrong, et cetera, because it was the right thing to do. Now, interestingly enough, Shmuel Golden points out that this is not the only Vayelech in Moshe's life. Right? Moshe's life also ends with Vayelech. Right? Again, the Parsha's Vayelech, right, is Vayelech Moshe. That's the end of the Parsha. That's the day Moshe died. So Moshe's life is bracketed, right, by Vayelech. Right? His beginning of his life is Vayelech, and the end of his life is Vayelech. And he points out, interestingly enough, that Avram Avinu, right, also had the word lech, right, lech lecha, right, that he said he has that twice, first by beginning his career as one of the Avos, when he had to travel to Eretz Yisrael, and then lech lecha again by the Akedah. Avram also, right, he had lech lecha, right, Hashem told him twice, and that's the same word. But, says Rav Shmuel Golden, very, very, very well pointed out, there are two differences between vayelech Moshe, and lech lecha. Lech lecha is, first of all, this is clearly lecha, right? It's for you, right? Then it's very Kosh Baruch is stating the obvious, right? That it will be good for you, right? And lech, it's command, right? Lech is a command, not a verb. Vayelech is a verb. Moshe did, right? Lech lecha is a command, right, to an individual. So said Rav Shmuel Golden that during the time of the Avos, during Bereishis, which we just finished, right, Jewish destiny is shaped and helped by Kosh Baruch Hu. Kosh Baruch Hu gave the instructions, right? He spoke to Avram, Lech Lecha, Bris Milah, etc. Right? He told Yitzchak not to leave Eretz Yisrael. He told Yaakov, go down to Mitzrayim, I'll take care of you, etc. Right? That's the Sefer of the Avos. That's, again, when Judaism was confined to like a couple of households and a couple of individuals, that Kosh Baruch Hu is fully invested, guiding things along. But when it comes to time for nationhood, right? When Bnei Yisrael already are millions of people big, right? Kosh Baruch Hu turns it over to each and every one of us. Right, man needs to take the initiative, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu is ready and willing to help, right? To do, you know, 99% of the effort. We always talk about, you know, we do the Shtadlus by Parnassa, for example, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us the bracha. Okay, but we have to take the first step. Right? And this is what Moshe did. This is, Moshe's life is bracketed by Vayelech, that he took a first step. Okay, Amram, his father, right, took a first step, right, did something that was probably difficult. And by the end of his life, right, Parshas Vayelech, right, Moshe had Vayelech Moshe, right, he had lived a life of taking initiative, and doing things, right? Again, I like to quote very often the Medrash I heard from Rav Chagai Raviv, that the Medrash at the end of the Torah says that Moshe, the Malcham Alas looked for Moshe, couldn't find him. Right? He looked for Moshe in Egypt, couldn't find him. Looked by Yamsuf, couldn't find him. Looked for him by Har Sinai, couldn't find him. Finally, Malcham Alas says to Kosh Baruch Hu, I can't find him, you take him. Now, what's that Medrash trying to do, tell us? Right? Pasuk says that Kosh Baruch Hu, right, took Moshe with Nishika, right, the same Misa that Aaron had. So the Medrash is trying to say that Moshe never settled. Rav Chagai explained that Moshe never settled. He was always traveling. He was always accomplishing. He could have very easily rested on his laurels, doing all the miracles that he did in Egypt. He could have just called it a career and it'd be done. But Moshe always was vayelech. He was always traveling. And he was always accomplishing. He was always moving to the next step. And this idea that Akash Baruch Hu is ready and willing to help us, right? Even though, but we have to take the first step, right? That's an underlying theme in the Parsha and also, right, the next few Parshios. Right, just to give a couple examples, right? As Kosh Baruch Hu, right, begins the redemption, Torah tells us, right, Vayan Chu Bnei Yisrael Min HaAvodah, right? They struggled under the weight, right, of the work. Vayezaku, right, and they cried out. Vatal Shavasom Elokim and Avodah, right? Their prayers came to Kosh Baruch Hu. Vayishma Elokim as Nakasam, right? He heard, right, their tefillos. Vayiskor Elokim as Briso as Abraham Yitzchak VeYaakov. Vayar Elokim as Bnei Yisrael Vayeda Elokim. Again, Kosh Baruch Hu, it's almost very random set of psukim that we almost don't need, right? The pasuk says Vayeda Elokim, and God knew, God saw, and he remembered the bris. What's going on over here? It's almost trying to highlight that when did Hashem Vayishma, Vayar, Vayeda, when Vayiskor? What does it mean? All those verbs that Kosh Baruch Hu did, whatever that means. What did that get kickstarted for? That kick gets kickstarted by the Vayizaku, that Bnei Yisrael cried out. Vatal Shavasam El Hashem. Right, that their cries reached the Kosh Baruch Hu, but the first thing they did was cry out, and only then Vayizkor, Vayishma, Kosh Baruch Hu, right, Vayeda, right, started the whole redemption process. Similarly, we didn't really point this out, but by the burning bush, right, Pasuk says, right, Vayomer Moshe, Asura Naveres Hamarei Agadol Azem Adur Lo Yivaras. Now, right, Moshe says, "Let me, what's going on with this bush?" And then the Pasuk says something fascinating, which I'm not sure if I mentioned before. It says, "Vayar Hashem Kisar Liros," that Hashem saw that Moshe turned to see, and then Vayikra Elav Elokim Mitoch Hasna. Hashem saw that Moshe turned to see, and then he called out to him, implying that if Moshe had been like, "Whoa, that's a really weird thing, that bush is not being burned," and then carried on his way, Hashem would not have reached out to him. Again, I don't know if that's true, but it seems to imply that from the psukim. It seems that Vayar Hashem Kisar Liros, Hashem saw that Moshe turned to see what was going on, and only then Vayikra Hashem Elav, and Hashem called out to him. Same thing by Basparo. Basparo, we know that she finds Moshe floating in the Nile, right? And we know that she stuck out her arms. We know that Hashem, the Rashi quotes a famous Medrash that her arms lengthened to reach Moshe Rabbeinu. But it's not that like Hashem blew the tide and the waves and Moshe ended up right by her feet. No, she stuck her arms out. Now, if she had to have her arms extend to reach Moshe in the Teva, obviously, by sticking her arms out, she didn't actually think she could get there. Right? Obviously, if there needed a nace for her to reach it, she probably stuck her arms out without much hope. But she did the first step, and Kosh Baruch Hu did the nace. Right? And in the next couple of parshios, you see by the plagues, right? Every time the plague has to be brought, Moshe and Aaron do some sort of action. They stretch their hand out, they hit the ground, they throw ashes into the sky, whatever. There's always some sort of action. Right? By Yom Sof, Moshe stretches his staff out. But in Israel, we have to do some sort of action. And then Akash Baruch Hu will do right? Even the greatest of miracles, right? Coach Bogle could have done the Nissan, the Makos without us. What did Moshe need to hit the ground for? But, well, we see this message throughout the entire birth of the nation, right? That Hashem is ready to help us, but right, we have to do the first step. We have to do the 1%, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the 99%. And again, if we internalize this idea, we've been talking about it for months, but that we put in the effort, we do our ishtalus, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it right the rest of the way. Right? And when a person realizes this, so then a person's weight is lifted off their shoulders. Right? There's no fear of failure, of not being good enough, of not accomplishing, or whatever. Right? We're all charged right with putting our ishtalus, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes out the rest of it. Right? Whatever the result of our ishtalus is, it's up to Hashem. So the stress lifts. Right, the stress lifts, and we don't have to deal with any of the pressure. Right, we put in our effort, and of course, Baruch Hu will take care of it. Okay, just very quickly, one more last vort. Again, as I mentioned, Miriam, kind of one of the unsung heroes of the Parsha, right? Bear Miriam, we gotta talk about Miriam a little bit. Again, we mentioned that Gemara in Sota about Amram divorcing Yocheved, right? Okay, Miriam also follows Moshe down to the river. Right, the Pasuk says that Leida Ma Yesof Nivu, the Gemara there says that Leida Ma Tiesof Nivu Asa, that Miriam went down to the river to see what would happen with Moshe, to see what would happen with her Nivuah. Why? Because she had a Nivuah. That's how the Gemara proves that she was one of the prophetesses, that she had a Nivuah, that her brother, that her mother would give birth to the Goel Yisrael, that her brother would be the Redeemer. And she wanted to know what would happen because she thought that this was it. It says the Chafetz Chaim, right, Miriam had the emunah that Moshe would be saved. She just didn't know how it would go down. Right? So she waited to see what would happen. Now, again, you have to think about this in practical terms if it was happening in real life. The baby's life is in danger. Right? Things are so bleak that the mother has to put the kid in a basket in the Nile River. That is basically throwing it away. Right? To use a modern comp, it's like taking a baby and dropping it in a garbage can. Right, for all intents and purposes, the Nile River, where all the Mitzrayim are, I mean, that's throwing a baby away. But Miriam has emunah and bitachon, everything will be okay. And even when the salvation comes, right, what happened? How does the salvation come? Bas Paro, the daughter of the king who's trying to kill all the Jews, shows up. I'm sure Miriam at that point was like, oh man, there's no way that looked terrible. It looked like it was a disaster. Right? There's no way, no point did it look like that was going to be the salvation, and yet it came from the most unlikely of sources. I mean, if you objectively saw Paro's daughter coming toward the basket, right, you thought it was the end. But she had a moon that comes to the Tova, and that, sure enough, obviously was the salvation. Which says the Chafetz Chaim, which goes to show in our lives, right, when we're waiting for some sort of salvation from something, some sort of Yeshua, some sort of help for things to get better, for whatever it is, it's up to us to have emunah bitachon in every situation, even the ones that look like it's going to be a disaster, because it could very well be, right, that this is exactly what this, you know, the Yeshua and the Hatzlacha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending. Rav Melech Biederman quotes in the name of Rav Nosson Meir Wachtfogel, who was Mashgiach of Lakewood, who passed away a bunch of years ago. He also quotes the Chafetz Chaim. He says, when, you know, there's a question, the Gemara says that when a person passes away, right, at the end of 120, is going to say, Hashem is going to ask him, Tzipisa li Yeshua. Did you look forward, right? Did you look ahead to the Yeshua, to the salvation? And we always assume that that means Mashiach. Did you look forward to Mashiach? Did you daven for Mashiach? So Chafetz Chaim says it's also in your own life, right? In Olam Hazeh, right? Did you look to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for salvation? Right? Did you wait? Did you daven? Did you wait the Yeshua that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send? Did it tzipita li Yeshua in this world? Right? Or did you get depressed and dejected and lose all hope? Right, that's the job of a Jew, no matter what scenario, how bad it is, how tough things are, whether it's shidduchim or job hunting or school or whatever it is, friends, whatever it is, socially, whatever it is, a Jew has to look to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and trust in his plan, right, to help them grow and accomplish, no matter what, even if it seems like the most unconventional salvation, the most unconventional Yeshua, right, is coming. All right, I hope everybody has a tremendous Shabbos, and we'll speak next week. Mitzvah Hashem, we'll see you guys soon.